Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Madashraya kata mishta. Shrinvanti katayanti cha.
Shrinvanti katayanti cha.
Tapanti vivida tapa. Naitan madgata chetasaha. Madashraya kata mishta. Shrinvanti katayanti cha. Tapanti vivida tapa. Naitan madgata chetasaha. Madashrayaha.
About me.
Kata.
Stories.
Mishtaha.
Delightful.
Shrinvanti.
They hear.
Katayanti.
They chant.
Cha.
And
tapanti.
Inflict suffering.
Vividaha.
Various.
Tapaha.
The material miseries.
Na.
Do not.
Etan.
Unto them.
Madgata.
Fixed on me.
Chetasaha.
Their thoughts.
Chetasaha.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. Engaged constantly in chanting and hearing about me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the sadhus do not suffer from material miseries because they are always filled with thoughts of my pastimes and activities. Purport. There are multifarious miseries in material existence. Those pertaining to the body and the mind. Those imposed by other living entities, and those imposed by natural disturbances. But a sadhu is not disturbed by such miserable conditions because his mind is always filled with Krishna consciousness.
Jai Shri Radha Kunja Bihari Shri Gornita.
And thus he does not like to talk about anything but the activities of the Lord.
Vachamsi Vaikuntha Gunanu Varnane.
Maharaj Ambarish did not speak of anything but the pastimes of the Lord. He engaged his words only in glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sadhus are always interested in hearing about the activities of the Lord or His devotees. Since they are filled with Krishna consciousness, they are forgetful of the material miseries. ordinary conditioned souls, being forgetful of the activities of the Lord, are always full of anxieties and material tribulations. On the other hand, since the devotees always engage in the topics of the Lord, they are forgetful of the miseries of material existence. The devotees are always serving Krishna, and this pleases Krishna. But to try to serve Krishna in the material world can be very anxiety-provoking. It's not easy to do anything for Krishna in this world. Motivated by desire for sense gratification and material success, we can tolerate so many austerities, so much trouble. So many people can work hard, not everybody, but many people can work hard, motivated by desire for material success. This is the impetus of the mode of passion. So there are people, unfortunately, who are too much under the influence of tamoguna, and they cannot even be properly directed by passion. But many people, there's still a large class of human beings who are passionately influenced. And for them, they need the attraction of the opposite sex, the attraction of money, the attraction of prestige and reputation and power. And these, impelled by these attractions, they can work very hard and undergo severe austerities. But when it comes to doing the simplest thing for Krishna, that you're not getting paid for, that your name will not be glorified for the simple service you do, nobody will even know you're doing it, then where's the motivation? The only motivation is love for your spiritual master, for Krishna. So if you don't have much of that love, then you don't feel much motivation. It's not easy, therefore, to do anything for Krishna. Even if you have love, even if you intensely are eager to satisfy Krishna, to satisfy your guru, to satisfy the Vaishnavas, there are so many disturbances when you go out and try to execute that desire. Material nature gives you trouble. Other living entities give you trouble. And your own mind and body don't cooperate. So it's very difficult to work for Krishna. Krishna is very satisfied. It's very difficult in this world to work for Krishna. In the spiritual world, things are much easier. There is no such pain. There are no such obstacles. There's no such confusion of the mind and fatigue. They don't exist in the spiritual world. So there, it's the easiest thing to do any kind of service for Krishna. But here, it's always difficult. So Krishna gets the greatest pleasure, and he showers us with his blessings, but we're having a hard time trying to serve him. Where do we get our encouragement and our satisfaction? From this, Madashraya Kata Mrishta Shrinvanti Katayanti Cha. The devotees take their pleasure in this world, especially, where there's no other source of pleasure, from remembering Krishna. And the most effective way to achieve that remembrance is to engage in kirtanam, glorification of Krishna. Katha, rishta, topics about Krishna. Katha just means narration about something. But here is Madashraya Kata. Topics that have to do about me. They may not be talking about me directly, but by talking about my devotees, by talking about my service, it is also talking about me. It's talks based on the glorification of Krishna, or aiming toward the glorification of Krishna. Mishkan. And these narrations are all pure. Because they're clean, because they're pure, because there's nothing material to them. Unlike hearing what comes out of the television set and the radio, mundane sound vibration, it will not drag your consciousness down. It will not fill you with thoughts of sense gratification. It's all purifying. It's all pure, and therefore, when you come in contact with it, you become pure. Mrishta. Mrishta comes from the verb mridge, to clean. It's clean, and it's cleansing. So shrinvanti katayanti cha. The devotees take their pleasure after a hard day's work, or before a hard day's work of serving Krishna, in the Brahma Muhurta hours. During the time for the morning sadhana, the devotees hear and chant about Krishna. Their japa, the kirtan, the Bhagavad Pravachan, they hear about Krishna's glories. Therefore, and shrinvanti katayanti cha, they hear and they recite. And therefore, because they're getting real satisfaction, all these troubles of living in the material world, and especially the troubles of trying to do some service for Krishna in the material world, they don't disturb the devotees. The devotees are not in pain. The devotees are not discouraged. They're not frustrated. Because they're satisfied, simply engaged in Krishna Katha, in hearing and chanting. This is described by Srila Sutta Goswami at the beginning of the Bhagavatam. Shushushok Shodadanasya Vasudeva Katha Ruchihi Sian Mahat Sevaya Vipras Punyatirta Nishevanat. If one is very fortunate, if a human being, because of something good that he did in the past, or just because some Vaishnav gave him causeless mercy, if he's extremely fortunate, he will develop some attraction to hearing about Krishna. This is the most fortunate thing. The greatest treasure you can achieve in life. Not winning a crore in a lottery, but somehow getting, you know, this lottery, the transcendental lottery, you're chosen to become attracted to hearing about Krishna. Your number has come up. How does it, but is it, can you do anything to earn this? Just like people try to speculate, is there some way to something you can do to help you win the lottery? Are there certain numbers that are lucky, or should you buy a certain number of tickets? Like that, there's a technique for winning the competition for who can get attraction to Krishna. Shushushro. Shuddhadanasya. The person who is most likely to get that mercy is the person who is shushushru and shuddhadana. Shushushru means literally eager to hear. You're eager to accept knowledge from transcendental authorities. You have some humility. You realize you don't know everything. And you want to know about the real purpose of life. Therefore, you are eager to hear. But shushushru, although the literal meaning is desiring to hear, in practical use, it has another meaning. Eager to serve. A person who shushushru is a person who wants to do some service. The two meanings are not disconnected. If you want to hear about Krishna, and you go ahead and hear about him, and hear about the fact that you're Krishna's servant, if you believe that, you're going to want to do some service for Krishna. So, in the case of Krishna consciousness, maybe not in other topics, but in the topic of hearing about Krishna, to want to hear naturally evolves into wanting to serve. So Shushushu has both those meanings. And Shraddhadana, faithful hearer. We, like the, as the sages headed by Shonaka at Naimisharanya told Sutta, we have faith in what you're saying. Manye, Shonaka told him, Manye Twam Vishaye Vacham Snatam Anyatra Chandra Anyatra Chandasat. O Sutta, I personally, I'm speaking for myself now, not for everybody else here in this assembly. I, Shonaka, am confident that you are expert Manye Twam Vishaye Vacham in all scriptural topics. You're a snata. What does snata mean? Having taken a bath. Well, I hope he's taken a bath. Everyone should take a bath every day. But that's not what it means. Literally, just he took a bath. When one has finished his education, when he has completed the course, he graduates. And the Vedic ritual for graduation is not to put on, you know, funny flat hat and get a piece of paper. No, it's to take a ritual bath. The brahmachari, when he's finished with his brahmachari training in the ashram, he takes the bath and the guru gives him permission. Okay, you can go home and get married now if you want, or you can stay here. But you've finished your education. That's snata. Snata means graduate. So you are expert. You're the you have graduated all courses of study. You're expert in all fields of knowledge. Oh, Sutta Goswami. Sutta Goswami, we call him Goswami, but he's not a Goswami, not in the material sense. He's not a member of the Goswami class. He's a Sutta. His father was Romaharshana Sutta, who insulted Lord Balaram and was killed by Lord Balaram. Ugrashrava Sutta, his son, is also of the Sutta subclass, Antyaja, outcast, because he's neither a proper Brahmin nor a proper Kshatriya. Originally, from that family was created by a Kshatriya marrying a Brahmin, a Kshatriya man marrying a Brahmin woman, which is irregular. Even if the husband and wife are not the same jati, the husband should be the higher jati. When it's pratiloma, inverted, then it's fallen. So the suttas, although they're female, the maternal blood is originally Brahminical, they cannot do the regular Brahminical work. They cannot study the Vedas. They cannot study the Shruti. They cannot recite the Vedic mantras. They cannot perform the Vedic sacrifices, the suttas. Although they have some Brahminical intelligence. So they have two, the sutta class has two standard occupations. They can drive chariots. Sutta means chariot driver. Sanjaya was a sutta. Others, Krishna's and everybody's chariot driver is usually a sutta. But the other occupation is they can be tellers of Puranas, reciters of Puranas and epics like the Mahabharata and Ramayana. This is the occupation of the suttas, Puranic reciters. So, sutta is simply in the family business, reciting Puranas. But Shonaka, who is Shonaka? He is one of the great Vedic rishis. He's author, or not author, but the seer, the rishi of a number of important hymns of the Rig Veda. He is the author, Sutta Ashonika Rishi, of the Rig Veda Pratishaka, the textbook for the students of the Rig Veda, how to pronounce properly the Vedic mantras. He's the expert in that field. In Vedic pronunciation is his specialty. And he also is expert, he also has, you know, received various Vedic mantras. So he's a great rishi. And a very prominent one. He's called Mahashala Shonaka Rishi. That means he's a grihasta and he has very big sacrificial halls. He's famous for performing big sacrifices and having many students. So he's been recognized as the head of the assembly where there are many prominent sages. He's speaking to Sutta Goswami and telling him, I have great respect for you. Even though you're a low-class man and I'm such a Pakka Brahmana, I think that you're the expert on all subjects and we should sit here at your feet and listen to you. Manye tam vishaye vacham, I think that you are expert in all subjects. Anyata chandasat, maybe you're not very expert in the Vedic mantras. Chandas means Vedic mantra, and it means, more technically, it means the meter, the rhythm of the Vedic mantras. Gayatri Chandra, Brihati Chandas, Chandas. These are the meters. So you don't know these technicalities. You only know Puranas. You don't know how to chant Vedic meters, maybe. You're not an expert in that field. You're not supposed to be because you're not a Brahmana. We don't care. That's not important. And he's the big expert. And he's humbly saying, we don't care that you don't know these little technicalities. You know, that we big Brahmins are supposed to know. You know what is important. You can glorify Krishna properly for us and enlighten us and drag us out of this material illusion in which we think we're such important Brahmanas. So the sages at Naimisharanya are very eager to hear Shu Shu Shu. And Sutta Goswami is in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, when they have so eagerly requested him to please enlighten them, what is the real essence of religion? You've studied all the Puranas and Itihasas. You've learned them from Vyasadeva and from other gurus. Tell us, what's the essence? What will actually make the soul completely satisfied? And he tells them, Vasudeve Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayojitaha. You must engage in pure devotional service to Vasudev. That, Savaipum Samparo Dharmo, this is the highest activity for the human being. The highest duty, the highest responsibility of human life is fulfilled when you engage in the devotional service of Vasudeva. And when that devotional service is ahoituki apratihata, without ulterior motives and uninterrupted, continue that service and don't stop it. And do it all the time, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Yayatma supersiditi. That is what, I'm answering your question. That is what gives full satisfaction to the self. So he goes on in this verse. Shushu shokshvara danasya. If someone like you great sages develops eagerness to hear, eagerness to serve Krishna, and confidence that this recitation of Srimad Bhagavatam will enlighten us, that the Bhagavatam is non-different from Krishna, that it reveals Krishna. Just as the devotees flock to the mandira, waiting for the chance to get Krishna's darshan, they are convinced this is the Supreme Lord, and they're coming to bow their heads down and make their offerings. Similarly, the devotees of the Bhagavatam are convinced that these words are the sound representation of Krishna himself. Shri Krishnaya namostume. I'm offering my obeisances, O Bhagavatam, unto you. You are Krishna himself. Sri Krishna Parivartita. You are the direct representation of Krishna, and in fact, you are simply Krishna incarnated in sound. This is how Srila Sanatana Goswami offers his obeisances to Srimad Bhagavatam. And Suta Goswami is telling the sages, yes, it's the greatest good fortune for any human being if he gets some inkling of real faith, real eagerness to hear the absolute truth. Then, by serving great souls, he'll want to serve sadhus. If he finds the right sadhus, the ones who are Vaishnavas, the ones who know Srimad Bhagavatam, they will share with them his eagerness, their eagerness, to hear the Bhagavatam. Shyam Mahat Sevaya, by serving the great souls, one gets the best thing in life, which is Vasudeva Kata, Ruchi Hi, interest in hearing the topics of Vasudeva. The topics are not hard to find. The Bhagavatam is available. Anybody can find a copy of the Bhagavatam. We have it here, or you can go to the Gita Press and get it for 30 rupees, because it's just the Sanskrit. Or you can get some Mayavadi translation. You know, so many people are performing Bhagavat Saptahas. So Bhagavatam is available. But you have to have some interest in it. If you're not attracted to it, you won't bother with it. You'll do something else at 8 o'clock in the morning rather than sit down and listen to Srimad Bhagavatam. So the thing that we need to have is this ruchi, this taste for hearing, this interest in hearing. If you have it, you're the most fortunate person. If you lose it, then you're very unfortunate. And the problem is that it is not difficult to lose. It's a subtle thing. It's so subtle that if your life becomes too complicated, you can forget about it and lose it. Lose your taste for hearing. If you're too absorbed in material business, in material success, if you're too busy and your mind is too agitated, you'll forget, you'll lose your taste for hearing about Krishna. So we take a vow. I'm not going to let myself become distracted and disturbed too much by Maya. I'm going to take a vow. I'm going to chant Krishna's name 16 rounds a day, as recommended. And I will every day sit down and listen to this Shastra, to Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. Then I won't lose my taste for hearing about Krishna. I'll get at least my minimal dosage every day, my 16 rounds, and sitting down at least for 15 minutes. If I can't be in the temple where the Bhagavatam is being recited, then I'll study it with my family at home for 15 minutes every day. Daily dose. Then I'm protected from losing that ruchi. Otherwise, it can just like the helium in a child's balloon, it'll just dissipate. It'll just disappear. The taste for chanting. So busy in doing work that you forget to chant 16 rounds a day. You neglect it. You've got all the Prabhupada's books in your house, but you never touch them. So that can happen very easily. Nashta pariyeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. But if we, as a daily regimen, as a discipline, every day make sure that we do our minimum adequate hearing and chanting, then we're protected. And actually, as we continue doing this day by day, week by week, year by year, all the contamination in our heart that is causing that danger of us losing our taste, our material propensities, will gradually be dissolved. We'll lose our, instead of losing interest in Krishna, we'll be succeeding in losing our interest in material life, step by step. And when you lose your interest in material life, when it's no longer that important to you to be materially successful, Krishna will give you all protection. Tavat karmani kurvita nanirvidyeta yavata matkata shravanadalva yavan shradhana jayate. How long should a person remain engaged in his material duties? When should he give them up? This is a big question. So many people ask it. Should I continue my material duties? Should I give them up? When should I give them up? Krishna answers it in the 11th canto when he's speaking to Uddhava. Tavat karmani kurvita. This is how long you should continue with your material duties. Until you become completely disinterested in them. And matkata shravanadalva yavan shradanajaya, until you develop very strong faith and interest in the topics about me, in Krishna Katha. When you're very interested in Krishna Katha, you can give up everything material. And Krishna will protect you. No one will stop you. Okay? No one, not the government, not your parents, no one will be able to touch you if you have complete faith in Krishna Katha. Madkata Shravanadova Yavan Shradhana Jayate. The Mayavadis also think they're losing interest in everything material. But they don't have that ruchi, attraction to Krishna and to hearing about Krishna. Therefore, Klesho Dikataras Tesham. They have to go through a painful struggle to gain their liberation. But devotees are easily liberated from material entanglement just by being attracted to hearing about Krishna. So the one gopi warns the other, if you want to maintain your circle of friendship in this material world, don't go see that boy standing on the river there. Don't look at him. Don't become attracted to him, or else your life is finished. So, if we want our material life to be finished, just become attracted to Krishna. And become attracted by hearing Krishna's names, by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Very simple process. We just have to become eager to do it. Get that ruchi by serving the great souls. And don't ever lose that ruchi. Work every day. Take your minimum dosage of hearing and chanting. And cultivate that taste constantly. Jai Shri Radha Kunja Bihari Shri Gurnitai. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Does anybody have any questions or comments? Well, it's not that there can't be any purification, but they're committing aparads. And so the purification is cancelled out by the aparads. Therefore, one should not hear from Mayavadi's glorification of Krishna. Because they're offending Krishna. Krishna, you're so wonderful. Your pastimes are so wonderful, but actually those pastimes are unreal, and you are unreal. Mayavadis, we call them Mayavadis, not because they say this material world is Maya. We also say that. So we're also Mayavadis, if that's what it means. But they say that the personality of Godhead is also an illusion. That he's not, the Absolute Truth is not a person. Krishna is just a fiction, that he didn't exist, but just like for the Mayavadis, everything that has name and form is only illusion. Krishna has a name and a form, he's also illusion. And they, in their philosophy, they say that the personality of Godhead is just the biggest illusion. When the total absolute truth is covered over by the mode of goodness, that is the personality of Godhead. When small particles, small parts of the absolute truth are covered by various modes, that is the conditioned souls. So Krishna is as much Maya as everything else, according to the Mayavadis. Therefore, they're totally offensive. And we should not even hear their glorification of Krishna. What is it? Shravanam Navakirtana Kartavyam Sarpo Chista Yata Payaha. Somebody who is envious of Krishna, and the Mayavadis are the most envious, they may glorify Krishna, but it's like taking milk that has been drunk by a snake, a poisonous snake, and he's left his venom in the milk. So you'll be poisoned by drinking that remnants of the snake's milk. So the Krishna Katha that has been touched by the envious person, the Mayavadi, is poisonous. Don't hear it. Hear from the pure devotees. Yes. Oh, well, it's going there. Here. Yes.
In Vedic intellectual hierarchy, the one who is an expert in Shruti is supposed to be superior than the one who is expert in Smriti. So in that way, is that Swarupisi, it should be in the hierarchy that is an expert in Shruti and Sundarswami in Smriti.
Yes, according to the normal standards, Shonaka Rishi should be sitting on the Vyasasana and Sutta should be sitting in the back. But all the sages, as soon as Ugrasravasutta wandered on the scene, this is described in Mahabharata, they immediately invited him to come sit on the Vyasasana. They wanted to hear from him. They didn't care about this normal rule that the Smritis are inferior to the Shrutis. Nigama Kalpataror Galitam Palam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit of the Vedic desire tree. Nigama means the Shruti. Agama means Smriti. So Bhagavatam describes itself as the essence of the Shruti. In his Tattva Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami actually makes the point that Bhagavatam, although it's officially one of the Puranas and therefore it's in the category of Smriti, and everyone can go ahead and think that, but the confidential information for those who are willing to hear it is that Bhagavatam is Shruti. Definition of Shruti, it's eternal scripture, therefore nobody wrote it, it's not somebody's composition, it's eternal. And being eternal, not when it's passed on from one generation to the other, not one word, not one syllable should be changed. Whereas the Smritis are rewritten by various sages in each age, and therefore the words do change in the Smriti. But Bhagavatam, every word of it is eternal. Therefore Vyasadeva spoke to Shukadeva Goswami 18,000 verses, the complete Bhagavatam, because that Bhagavatam is eternal. Even the verses where Shukadeva Goswami is going to speak to Parikshit, even the verses where Sutta is going to speak with Shonaka, those verses, the whole thing, were spoken by Vyasadeva to Sutta Goswami. Not just some other part of the Bhagavatam, the entire Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is eternal Shruti. That's Jiva Goswami's definite opinion in the Tattva Sandarbha. That's the authority of the Bhagavatam. It's on the level of the best Shrutis. The original Vedas, we don't have much access to in Kali Yuga. People don't even have the intelligence and the time to study, even memorize or learn, read all the Vedas, all the Shrutis. Even one Shruti, even one Shaka. Who can even study all of it? And then what does being of understand what it means? We don't have the capacity in this age. We have so many in Mathura, everybody, all the Brahmins are Chobe. Chobe means Chaturvedi. Chaturvedi, that means he studied four Vedas. But finally, one Brahmana in Matra has even studied one Veda. You know, nobody studied. They have the name Chaturvedi, Dvivedi. But who studied those Vedas? Who's even read them? Some few Brahmins have read, but nobody understands. In Kali Yuga, nobody understands. So therefore, Itihasa and Purana become very important in Kali Yuga to teach the Vedic knowledge to people who are not qualified to understand the original Vedas. And then among the Itihasas and Puranas, Srimad Bhagavatam is supreme. Extremely important. That is our access to Vedic knowledge in Kali Yuga. It's our Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay. Yes, Prabhu.
Krishna
says, Bhagavad Gita says, those who study this conversation of mine, worship me with their intelligence. So is this applicable only to devotees or also to the mundane scholars or yanis or mayavadis?
Not mayavadis.
They're disqualified. They envy Krishna. So Krishna will not accept their worship. Just like he, Duryodhana cooked a wonderful feast and Krishna refused to eat it. So those who are enemies of Krishna and his devotees, Krishna will not accept their worship. But innocent impersonalists who are not envious, Krishna will accept their study of the Gita. And eventually, they'll be directed to the right path. They can become eventually attracted to Krishna because they don't hate Krishna. But the Mayavadis hate Krishna. There's a difference between the innocent class of impersonalists who simply are naive, Brahmavadis. They can study Bhagavad Gita and Bhagavad Gita will reveal Krishna to them. Especially if they get some guidance from the Vaishnavas.
What about the mundane scholars?
Well, generally the mundane scholars, if they're following the methodology of critical scholarship, they're not allowed to believe what the Shastra says. Bhagavatam says it was compiled by Vyasadeva 5,000 years ago. And they have to dismiss that. This is just, you know, whoever wrote this 600 or 800 years ago put this in here to make it sound authentic, that Vyasadeva wrote this Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago. It obviously can't be true. They just assume that what the Shastra says about itself has to be false. Assume. They have no proof. So if that's the way you approach the Shastra, faithlessly, what are you going to get out of it? You refuse to accept what it says. You want to simply take your specimen, kill it, and dissect it. So, you know, Hare Krishna. We have to let the Bhagavatam speak. At least with the theoretical, hypothetical, you know, conjecture that maybe what it says is true. Let me listen to it at least. But if you assume before you even start listening that what is going to be said can't be true, that I must subject it to the utmost scrutiny and criticism and not accept anything on faith, then you will get no transcendental realization from it. You may get some interesting facts on the basis of which you can write a PhD thesis, write a book, and gain followers and a position in the university. But you'll learn nothing about Krishna. And nothing about what Krishna really is. So generally the mundane scholars, because they're sold out to that critical outlook, they can't get actual entrance into the spiritual understanding. There may be exceptions. Especially since some people who enter into the academic world are Vaishnavas already, so they're protected more or less. But it's unfortunate that a Vaishnava has to deal on that level, that he has to become a critical scholar. Why not be a Vaishnava scholar and be able to present everything honestly rather than show disrespect to the Shastra? We should show all respect to the Shastra. We shouldn't be ashamed to say that Vyasadeva spoke this 5,000 years ago. But if you're working in the university, you're not allowed to say that. Everyone will laugh at you.
This is also possible, actually. In the Mayavadis, the mundane scholars are faithless. Both are the same category, or Mayavadi are
worse? It's worse to be a Mayavadi. Yeah, worse to be a Mayavadi than just to be a mundane scholar. Of course, some mundane scholars are Mayavadis too. In India, a lot of people are influenced by Mayavadi ideas in all spheres of life.
In India, many people are just innocently pious.
Yes.
They go to any Bhagavad Sattva to hear some dharma. So will they also get influenced if it's a Mayavadi speaker?
Well, if the speaker is under the influence of the Mayavad misrepresentation, if he's sitting there and talking about Krishna's pastimes, but he's convinced that Krishna is just an illusion, he doesn't believe that Krishna is the absolute truth, then those who hear him will also become contaminated. The consciousness of the speaker always affects, you know, the hearer. The purity, the effect of what's being spoken, even if it's just repeating some ancient scripture, the effect of the recitation it depends on the consciousness of the speaker. It's always filtered through the consciousness of the speaker. There's no such thing as a completely unbiased, neutral presentation. Whenever you repeat something, it's always passing through your consciousness. The Bhagavatam is said, Nigamakalpataro galitam palam shukamukad amrita drava samutam. By being touched by the lips of Shukadev, the transcendental parrot, this Bhagavatam has become all the more relishable. That means it's sweeter and it has deeper meaning, because Shukadev, what did he do? All he did was repeat the same words. He didn't change one word. He didn't add one word of his own interpretation. So what's the difference between Bhagavatam before Shukadev touched it and after? It's passing through his intelligence, even though all he's doing is repeating the same words. Someone can sit here, I do it, it doesn't have any effect, but someone who is Krishna conscious, if he simply repeats Krishna's words and doesn't even add one word of his own, he's adding his consciousness to it. And that affects the hearers. That is another level of translation. You're doing a translation, even though you're not changing the language, even though you're not adding any interpretation, you're just repeating the original words. That's also a translation. Shukadev translated Srimad Bhagavatam by repeating exactly what he heard from his father. It became a different book by being spoken by Shukadev Goswami. It's a mystic process, how without changing one word, the meaning changes, but it does. So if a Mayavadi sits and recites Srimad Bhagavatam, and even if he doesn't add any nonsense of his own, and usually they do, usually they go off on way off on tangents and don't speak much, you know, they sing some songs and tell some funny stories, and there's not that much that's directly off the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam in most Bhagavad Saptahas. Some are different. Mostly they're just popular entertainment. So if the consciousness will always affect the end result of the recitation, even if he doesn't change anything or add anything.
But you see that the hearers are just being victimized for no fault of theirs. They just want to hear some pious thing and they get victimized. So whose fault is this?
The whole society is at fault for allowing this to go on. You know, it is cheating business in the name of Srimad Bhagavatam. It should be condemned. It should be criminal to perform Bhagavatam recital for your own livelihood as a means of making a living. It should be illegal. Just like it's illegal to make a living by selling illicit drugs. By selling, you know, cocaine to children in the school grounds. If someone does that, you know, brings, a trunk full of cocaine to sell to children in the school, he'll end up, you know, if he's caught, he'll end up in jail. So someone who performs Bhagavad Saptaha to make money should also be treated as a similar criminal. Okay?
Krishna?
Yes.
So, you made a point in Bhagavatam class that when should one give up this six-kind duties? And you quoted a shloka from 11 kinds of.
Yes.
So, can you kindly elaborate something more on this?
Well, it means that you shouldn't give up everything until you develop taste. That means that you should, Krishna's saying it in a positive way, you should continue your material duties until you've actually developed interest, serious interest in hearing about Krishna. When your interest in hearing about Krishna is still weak, okay, then don't give up your material duties yet. It's a very simple thing. This is the principle of the practical guideline, when to renounce and when not to.
How does this, one can connect to a grandson, because he also is engaged in his family duties, which are actually prescribed duties, so how can this be connected?
No, but a Krishna conscious grihastha is engaged in spiritual duties. He's maintaining his family not for material for material prosperity. He's aiming for the family's spiritual prosperity. He's earning money to pay the rent and put food on the table, but he's keeping that within limits. His as much as he can, his endeavor is toward the family's spiritual welfare. Engaging himself and his family members in Krishna's service is his real interest. And making a living is secondary. That's the difference between a grihastha and a grihamedi, between a materialistic householder and a Vaishnav grihastha. A Vaishnav grihastha should be primarily interested in his family's spiritual progress. Then whatever he does is not material. He's doing what he has to do, but his main aim is to please Krishna and engage everybody, his family and others, in Krishna's service. Then his endeavors become transformed. They're no longer material. He's already done it. He's given up material karma. And on the strength of hearing and chanting. What gives him the strength to do it is that he's chanting Hare Krishna and he's immersed in the transcendental knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. And therefore he has the strength to transform that material life into spiritual life, even while in his household situation. Yes?
I wanted to ask about Grihastha devotee, Grihastha, like how much emphasis is put on giving up his family after the age of 50 years?
Yes.
Then
that has to be judged practically. You know, it's not that okay. You know, tomorrow is my 50th birthday. I'll see you all in the next life. You know, that can be easily abused. So in many situations, but it's not practical. So one should take guidance from his spiritual master and other devotees. You know, I can actually get away with, you know, leaving the family. The children should be grown up. You know, when the children are grown up and the wife, they can take care of the wife, then the husband can leave, or the husband can leave with the wife and they can go on vanaprastha. When the children can take care of themselves, then the husband and wife can retire. Vanaprastha life, hopefully around the age of 50, that can be done. Children, you know, if you had children when you were 20, the children should be grown up. So then there's no reason to maintain the material establishment. You can wind it down and go off to visit the holy places or to perform Krishna's service full time. But, you know, exactly when that happens is different for each individual. So one should consult with spiritual master and authorities if you're in doubt about that, whether or not it's appropriate. You have an idea in your head to run off, and whether that's appropriate or not, you should ask. Okay. Yes, Prabhu. Having actual taste should be unconditional. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur talks about ruchi being conditional and unconditional in his Madhurya Kadambani. It's immature to have conditional taste. Just like he gives the examples of prasadam and kirtana. I only like this prasadam cooked by this devotee. I don't like this cook, and I won't take his prasadam, or I'll just take a little bit. That's immature. If you have mature attraction to prasadam, you'll accept anything that's been offered to Krishna and be happy with it, because it's Krishna's remnants, not because it was cooked nicely for you. And the kirtan, Krishna's names are being chanted, whether they're being chanted artistically or expertly, you know, according to the popular style or not. The fact is that Krishna's names, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to see to it that the kirtans and the Gaudiya Math were intentionally not artistic, that it was unexpert, because there were so many expert Bengali kirtaniers. You can still hire, if you have an ashram, you can go out and hire kirtan players from Bengal, pay them enough and they'll sing beautiful kirtans. But where's the devotion if you're doing it for money? So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, to counteract that, he made sure that the kirtans in the Gaudiya Math weren't so expert. And when he got a plate of Mahaprasadam, he would mix everything up for himself before he ate it and put lots of salt on it, on everything. So that he wasn't judging materially, that I like this, I don't like that. That's conditional attraction. When you're unconditionally attracted, any prasadam, any kirtan, and then any Bhagavatam recital, even the most inexpert, if something has been repeated that Shukadev Goswami said, if devotee giving a class managed to repeat something that Prabhupada said in between all of his rambling, then you should be in ecstasy to hear it and satisfied. Not that you're a connoisseur of Bhagavatam classes and you skip most of them because you don't like them. That's unconditional attraction, unconditional taste. That's much more mature. That's what we should aim for. Okay.
In the sadhana stage, is it more important to understand the tattva rather than the lila?
In the sadhana stage, you heard, everyone heard, I think. Yes. That's what Prabhupada's preaching. Devotees may sometimes wonder why he says the same things over and over again. Because we have to understand the tattva, the facts, the basic facts. First, we have to be convinced, I'm not this body, my life belongs to Krishna. Until we are convinced of that, we're going to have to hear it over and over again. And when we understand we're not our body, then we can enter into the relishing of Krishna's intimate pastimes. If we think of this body, we can't go near the rasa dance. We have to respect it from a distance. As long as we still think we're male, female, then we cannot enter into those intimate pastimes. We should not even hear too much of them. So yes, tattva first. A lot of tattva, until we're completely convinced. That was Prabhupada's style. It was very much Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's style. Not to, in general public, to be telling a lot of juicy, intimate pastimes. You never heard Prabhupada talking like that. He was always preaching philosophy. Not that he was ignorant of the pastimes. And not that he couldn't tell sweet things. But it wasn't appropriate, especially in general assemblies. Okay?
Sometimes it is advised that you can read some sections of Srimad Bhagavatam, where the pastimes are more, but
You can read the Krishna book. Prabhupada has presented the pastimes of 10th canto in his book that he published before he translated most of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, a devotee who is initiated should, as far as I'm concerned, this is my personal opinion, as part of his training, should at least read all of Prabhupada's books once. And then you might as well read them read the Bhagavatam from beginning to end. If you're going to try to read all of it, read it from the beginning to the end. Even if that takes years, it should be considered part of your basic training to at least do it once. Read the whole Bhagavatam, read the whole CC. Devotees shouldn't be too busy to be able to do that, at least eventually complete that as part of their basic spiritual training. Negative thinking is a natural function of intelligence. To be attracted and repelled are the functions of intelligence. So, I don't like this. I don't like to put my hand in the fire. That's negative thinking. But it's not in the mode of ignorance. Negative thinking can be in the mode of pure goodness. It depends. I think, I know what you mean. It's unnecessarily worrying. But that's... It leads to the mode of ignorance, yes, because it's useless mental engagement. Or can you clarify?
Negative thinking, which is truth, but which is not truth that is Krishna, is a mode of ignorance.
Yes. Or maybe in the mode of passion, but anyway, it's in the lower modes. To engage your body in activities that are irrelevant to Krishna's service and engage your mind in thoughts that aren't going to make you or anybody else Krishna conscious. Yes, there's so many horrible things in the world. There's so many reasons to be discouraged. What good is it to you? Does it do you to become discouraged? You can do something to improve the world, but not by becoming discouraged. So yeah, the negative thoughts, anyway, whatever mode they're in, there may even be negative thoughts in the mode of goodness, but they're not helpful. The mode of goodness can also be very harmful. If it's mode of goodness that has nothing to do with Krishna. Okay.
Is it equally purified? Or is it getting purified or not? And if it's getting purified, is it equally improving in RTS with Lord also?
Everybody's different. So, what's the difference? If the brahmachari attains love of God, and I, the grihastha, also attain love of God, I'm not going to become him, he's not going to become me. And what is it? How do you measure who's better than whom? We both achieve our own individual perfection. The measurement should be against what we as individuals can be, and how much short we are of that. That should be our comparison, not me again compared to somebody else. I'll never have the talents and the qualities that someone else has because I'm a different person. So in many ways he's better than me, and maybe in a few ways I'm better than him. And in the progress I've made in my spiritual life, I've accomplished some things that he hasn't accomplished. But we're different. So I should really be comparing myself against myself, what I ultimately can be. I could be completely surrendered to Krishna. I could give up all these anarthas I know I have. Against that standard, I should be comparing myself.
I wasn't comparing anything.
Well, you were saying who was better. That's what you're...
No, not comparing. Yeah. I was asking whether it's equally purifying.
Equally purifying.
Rasa brings prescribed duties in Krishna consciousness. And the Brahmacharya is standing with 64 rods and 10
Is it equally purifying? Yes. It may be more painful to try to serve Krishna as a grihastha. It's more troublesome. It's generally easier to do it as a brahmachari. But it's not easy to be a brahmachari. It's not easy to maintain the simplicity and the purity to just not be interested in material things. You're a human being. So you have to, it's an effort to be a brahmachari. Once you simply do that, then life is easy, in a way. Whereas when you make the step of entering into family life, life becomes complicated. So that complication is difficult. But Krishna recognizes your endeavor. You may not be able to do as much as the brahmachari, hardly as much, because you're encumbered. But Krishna recognizes that you're doing everything you can. And he showers his blessings. So there's no reason why you can't make just as much progress, get just as much benefit from your endeavor, even though it may not look like you're accomplishing as much. The accomplishment is getting Krishna's blessings, his satisfaction. Getting the blessings of your spiritual master by satisfying him. And a grihastha, there's no reason why a grihastha can't do that as much as a brahmachari. It's not according to what you know, measuring it on the outside, what you've accomplished externally, how many rounds you've chanted, or, you know, what activities you've done. It's the matter of the heart. Krishna sees the endeavor and he sees the attitude. And the spiritual master sees also. He's empowered by Krishna to see. And they reciprocate, especially Bhavagrahi Janardana. Krishna responds to the attitude, to the intention. You have the pure intention, then you've achieved perfection. Become Krishna conscious, attain love of God, you've achieved absolute perfection. It doesn't matter what position you achieved it from, but you've achieved it. So there's nothing better than that. Whether you're grihastha or whatever, if you've achieved Krishna's satisfaction, then your life is perfect. Okay. Maybe one last question. Prabhu, you had a question? Okay.
I'm coming back to the previous question, but you said if the speaker is not pure, then his consciousness is transmitted to the hearer.
Yeah.
But in ISKCON, we have so many speakers, and I don't know if all of them who sit under Vyasa Ashram, if they have their mind and senses fully controlled and fully self-realized. But they always say that we are not perfect, repeating Prabhupada's words. But what I'm saying is perfect. So in that sense, the hearer comes to hear the philosophy. So how would the person be contented?
No, Srimad Bhagavatam is all pure. So within the context of ISKCON, we're safe. We can also argue similarly. I don't want to eat the prasadam in such temple because I know the cook is a little bit in Maya. I've seen a black aura around his head. I've heard this in Russia. I've heard such things. So I won't eat the prasadam, even though it's offered to Krishna. But the thing is, it was offered to Krishna. Krishna accepted it. By Krishna accepting the offering, even if the cook is a little, down, a little depressed, or maybe his behavior is not perfect, but Krishna accepted the offering. It was put on the altar by the pujaris. And my spiritual master installed the deities. And when he installed the deities, he asked Krishna, I know my disciples are imperfect, but I'm asking you, Krishna, to accept their worship. So on the request of the spiritual master, Krishna is accepting the offering, even if the cook is this or that. So therefore, we're sitting here speaking Bhagavatam on Prabhupada's order. Because Prabhupada can't be sitting here right now. So we're speaking the Bhagavatam class for him, speaking his purports. Therefore, we're protected. If it's it's an ISKCON Bhagavatam recital, then we can take it like we're hearing from Prabhupada. It's on his order. just as the deity worship is simply directly on Prabhupada's order. Prabhupada has arranged for the installation of these deities, and he's requesting Krishna to accept our worship. And he's requesting Krishna to make our words pure enough that the devotees will benefit from hearing them. Because it's under Prabhupada's direct auspices, therefore it's pure. There's no danger involved. Yes. Otherwise, we should go around refusing to take prasadam because there's some doubt about who made the offering. But the offering's being made under the authority of a pure devotee. Therefore, it's pure. Okay, so we can stop here now? Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.